Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome to the MMA Fan Podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you Stu and Blake.
Right, quickly, before we get on with the episode, we've got an announcement. The MMA Fan Podcast is now sponsored by Free Train. Blake, what's Free Train?
Free Train is a fantastic company that do these amazing vests for when you run, when you train. Whether you're going for a run or hitting the bag, you can keep your phone close to your chest. And they're brilliant. They've got a little pocket for your keys. You no more do you need to have your phone rumbling around in your pocket or at an awkward angle on your arm or anything like that. You've got the vest on. Phone's there, easy access to it. They do some great gloves as well to keep your hands warm and be able to touch the phone and everything. It's all linked up with your phone. So yeah, they're a fantastic brand. A couple of pockets for your keys, everything you need when you go for a run or if you're hitting the bag training.
And you're not just saying this for the sake of it. Before they even become our sponsors, you had one of these vests, didn't you?
Yeah. Yeah, I've still got it. I run with it all the time. But yeah, before they became our sponsors, I had one of these vests. They are genuinely brilliant. I really like them. And I'm really pleased they're our sponsor.
And if you want one, if you head over to freetrain.com, when you go shopping and you put all your stuff in your basket, just before you check out, if you put in the code MMAFAN, you'll save yourself 10%. Don't say we don't spoil you here on this podcast. 10% off an amazing vest from Free Train. www.freetrain.com.
All right, let's get on with the show.
Sorry to interrupt the podcast, but we've got another sponsor to tell you about. Feel Supreme. They're a nationally recognised brand who offer only the very highest quality of natural supplements. Their extensive range includes a range of medicinal mushrooms, nootropics, anti-aging products, gut support products, green powders, vitamins and much more.
Yep, they've worked with fighters from all the top promotions including UFC, Bellator, Brave and Cage Warriors with a solid reputation of providing results. So check them out on Instagram, which is at @feel_supreme. Or their website, www.feelsupreme.co.uk, and make sure you use the code MMAFAN for a cool 15% off your first order. Don't say we don't spoil you.
Hello, and welcome to the MMA Fan Podcast. I'm Stu Whiffin, sitting opposite me, laughing like a hyena for some reason. Blake Harrison, hello, what's funny?
No, I just thought I didn't know if we were going to do that thing. Like, I thought you were going to pause for ages thinking, am I going to start and you're going to start? And I've been leaving it to you for loads lately. So, yeah, I just thought it was
How
funny.
How are you?
You amuse me. I'm good. How are you?
I'm all right. I'll tell you what, let's waste no time. Let's bring our guest straight into the fold. Scribius Pip, welcome back. How are you?
It's good to be back. I'm good, lads. And before we get into anything, I need to give a quick shout out to you boys. That episode with the Hardwick brothers was just so good. I tweeted about it because I genuinely almost skipped it because I'm like, oh, I'm not familiar with these guys. And you were putting a lot out of that period, right, with the Cage Warriors
yes,
build.
Yeah.
But I was so pleased I didn't skip it because those boys are hilarious. And then obviously I watched the event with extra attention on them and they were amazing in there as well. But great work, gents. It was so good. They're such legends.
Thanks, Roger. They made it really fun. They're just two really, really funny guys. And I think it's really nice that they come as a little pair. Yeah, don't they? They come as a double act. And just the fact that, like, George is clearly there being like, oh, well, when he's fighting, I'm just watching YouTube, or like, you know, he has this really...
watching Uncle Roger. I'm a big fan of Uncle Roger, which is what he was watching on YouTube instead of his brother's fight. Love it.
But then having like really intense stare downs, and you realise, oh no, he just had an upset stomach and he was trying not to shit himself. I mean, that's just brilliant. That's just, yeah, I love it. Shout out to the Hardwick brothers. I hope they're listening, and yeah, we'll maybe get them on again soon.
Absolutely. Brilliant. Absolutely. Well, obviously, we're here today to look ahead to UFC 267. However, we're recording this on Sunday the 24th in the wake of last night's scrap. Not a couple of big boys, a big boy and an even bigger boy fought last night. So should we touch on that card?
Yeah. Costa Vittori. Obviously, there's the massive scheduled to be a middleweight fight. Costa seems to just turn up really overweight and say, oh, I'm not going to make middleweight. They then sign a 195-pound catchweight agreement. And then like a day or two after that, Costa then realises he won't even make 195 pounds. So they make it a light heavyweight fight at 205. Obviously, the usual thing when someone misses weight, 20% of Costa's purse was forfeited to Vittori, but it kind of just doesn't feel like it tells the whole story, does it? Because it's like, it wasn't just he stepped on the scales and missed weight or whatever. It's like, it seemed to be purposefully just not even trying, whilst at the same time knowing that Vittori will be cutting weight. He will be dieting down and then getting to the stage where he has to like water load and cut all the water weight and all that kind of stuff. So he's trying to go in with... It feels like he was purposefully trying to go in with an unfair advantage, and he made very little effort to actually make any form of weight or agreed weight anyway. But well done to Vittori for kind of just... I don't know, just being a really game fighter and just going, I don't give a shit, I'm just going to take you on anyway. What were your thoughts on it, Pip?
Yeah, I completely agree. I never foresaw a situation where Vittori would be the hero going into a fight, because he doesn't normally cover himself in glory and be the most likable guy, but 100% on his side as he goes in. I will just say that they did mention briefly on commentary that Costa had alluded to some kind of issues in his camp that he said he'll go into at a later date or whatever. And it could be excuses, it could be nonsense and bullshit, but always a little bit of caution on, we don't know what's going on with so many things in the world at the moment. But yeah,
well,
just seem like absolute shithousing of going, oh, we'll do 195. Nah, we won't. We'll do just, yeah.
What I've heard, just to pick up on that, what I've heard is that he had a torn left bicep.
Right.
So that's why. But that, to me, I mean, look, I've never torn my bicep. I barely have any biceps. But I just feel like it's, the you know, I don't feel like that's enough to just not bother with the weight. Because I think we've heard stories of fighters with far worse injuries, leg injuries, all that kind of stuff, where they have made the weight.
100%. I think if it had stayed at the 195, I might have thought, well, maybe if his camp was generally less active, he might be coming a bit heavy. But the fact that they moved to 195 and then moved it up again, it's laziness and it's just terrible attitude.
And but yeah, it's not just him. It's, you know, it's his, you know, the people in his camp as well. He's ranked number 2 in the world. They've got, you know, they're on the payroll, and they, you know, they've got a duty to ensure that everything is on target. So there's got to be something happening there in camp for the fact that he's so far off. You know, this must have been going on for a while, because you will be cutting weight weeks ago, starting to slowly make that weight. And I do think that there's definitely something going on in camp other than injury.
It really, his interviews about it and everything, and even with his being on the red wine before the Adesanya fight, all of this reeks of ego and arrogance. And I mean, I slightly understand it, because look at him. Yeah. How wouldn't you be arrogant? He's gorgeous and he's built like a god, and he was like, he's the number 2 hardest guy in his weight class in the world. I can see that going to someone's head, but that doesn't, that maybe means you shouldn't continue as a professional fighter, because you need to get that shit under control. Go and do, you know, Jake Paul's circus type, I mean, fighting events.
We'll talk about the fight, but just on the fact that you said, you know, rarely is anybody going to be Team Vettori. I love the fact that the UFC are thinking, right, we can market him now. He's going to be the hero that's going to come out of this. Puts on the display that he put on, and they just think, brilliant. Stick the mic in his face.
Yeah.
So, Costa, well, he's a cunt.
Yeah, yeah.
Amazing. Just blown it out the water straight away.
Tell you what, though, I was thinking this earlier on today, as much as all of this has been a massive annoyance, it upped the excitement for this fight massively, right?
Yeah.
It was a fight I was probably looking forward to.
Yeah.
Decent enough, better than some of the recent headlines, but this controversy had me dying to see the baddie lose and the goodie win as such. And then when I actually got in there, despite the commentary keep talking about it, I didn't think the weight difference looked ridiculous. It ended up feeling like a really kind of, yeah, a good bit of promo in the end. I wish they'd just privately, behind closed doors a week or so ago, said, shall we not bother cutting weight? Let's just make a big drama instead and promote the fight. But yeah, I don't think that's how it happened. But it definitely got everyone talking.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the thing. With any of these fights, the thing that really, really drives me to watch it is the stakes. What's at stake? And when you've got two guys that have been beaten by the champion that, you know, I mean, all right, they're doing well in a middleweight division that is maybe slightly shallow. There's not a huge amount at stake. It's a fun fight, and it's a fight I would have been very interested to watch regardless, but only because of, oh, it's two guys that are going to go to war with each other, not because, oh, the winner of this is probably next in line for a title shot. You know, Vittori's not getting a title shot now with Adesanya as champion. Costa's probably miles off of that, even if he'd have won the fight. So there wasn't a huge amount at stake, and this drama did give it something extra, didn't it? And I was, as you say, I was there going, oh, fuck, I actually find myself wanting Vettori to win. I never thought I'd say that. I'm Team Vettori.
Nick Pete did an amazing tweet before it started last night saying Costa could turn all of this around if he wins and then calls out the winner of next week's 205, a light heavyweight belt. Because, again, Vettori could have done that as well, just going, look, I was number two in my weight class or number three or whatever. I've just had a good win at 205. I like it at this weight. Let's go. Because as you say, I can't see either of them really ever fighting Israel again because they were both so far behind his skills or skill set, particular skill set.
But there was, there's been lots of talk on the socials. I see that Dan Hardy put a post up about, if Costa's to now fight at light heavyweight, who would you like to see him fight? And there was lots of talk of Jimmy Manoa on that tweet. A lot of people saying Dominic Reyes would be a great fight. But for me, apparently Dana's also said, no, he's staying where he is. So from what Dana's saying, he's staying at middleweight. But
no, Dana said he's got to stay at 205.
Oh, really?
Right, yeah, that makes more sense. Yeah.
Dana said he's now staying at 205. He's
that
not fighting in middleweight
anymore.
That makes
way more sense because I was thinking, why on earth are they going to try and keep him where he clearly can't make that weight?
No, I mean, there was rumours flying around that he wanted to get cut. He maybe sees an opportunity to fight like a YouTuber or in Bellator or something like that and earn more money and arguably have less competition. And there was a rumour, possibly not true, that he wanted to get cut, which is why he's behaved the way he has. But Dana White's basically come out saying he was a nightmare this week, but when someone puts on a performance like he did, you know, you can't fault him. And, yeah, I mean, he will fight at 205. I think there's some great fights out there for him at 205. I think it could be really interesting to see how he does. What I was just quickly interested in was the fight itself. Did you actually score it the way the judges scored it? And what did you think of the point getting taken away for the eye poke when there was just one eye poke? It wasn't like he'd done it twice or three times. It was the first eye poke. And Jason Herzog apparently had been warning him previously, but I don't see that very often in fights where there's one eye poke and immediately it's like point. And it makes you, the little conspiracist in my mind starts going, Oh, are they just on him because of how he's been this week? Are they just on him? But I don't know. What do you think?
I thought Herzog was absolutely on fire last night. His point deduction in the Bruce Leroy fight was fantastic. And the point deductions are meant to be, rather than a punishment, levelling out the damage done by the foul. So if the foul is going to continue to affect the fight going forward, they can take one and even 2 points if they feel it's enough damage, if the fighter wants to continue. And I felt, yeah, he had warned him of his hands. So he said, again, I didn't particularly notice, but there were warnings all night of people with their fingers out. There was a lot of it. So if he's warned him, then you only have to do it once. It shouldn't be I can get away with it once, but if I do it again, I'll get a penalty. Because it's like, well, that's a license to cheat, essentially, isn't it? So, yeah, I thought it was great.
Do you think it was purposeful, though? Because it seemed accidental to me.
I thought it looked accidental.
Yeah, but again, it is still, it's the whole... I think the eye poke was accidental. I think the kick in the nuts he did almost immediately afterwards, which didn't get a stoppage, was completely his anger. Yeah, I think it was accidental, but I also think get control of your hands. I don't even like the, if you're going to have your fingers out, have them pointing up. Just don't have your fingers up. Just the pointing up's a weird thing because it depends on the angle and the height difference and whatever. So, yeah, if your fingers are constantly out, John Jones is an example of this. His fingers are constantly out when he fights. He almost always catches someone at some point. If it's a continued thing throughout your career, then just punish them immediately, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking about Costa Zanzia, but I think we've got to spend a little bit of time talking about his legs, because those kicks, and let's go, props to Vettori. Because
he wore
every single one of them. And even at some point...
Barely flinched, right?
Exactly, barely flinched. And it was like... I don't know which one of the commentators said, it sounds like they're kicking tyre pads, but he's kicking a body. Mm. And like, it was... They were just ferocious. And that's a lot of weight behind them kicks. And they were lightning fast. And like I say, it just walked through them.
The thing that gets me with Costa is he never loses his power. Like, I thought he looked gassed about halfway through the first round. It was bizarre. He got a second wind at places and things like that. But even when he was looking his most exhausted, he'd then just throw a punch or a kick that just looked like it would have knocked anyone else out. So, yeah, that's the constant threat of Costa, I guess.
Mm. And is that also a byproduct of having fighters not cut weight? Like, if they had dehydrated their bodies, dehydrated their brains with that kick to what looked like sort of almost even the back of Vettori's head. It was like the side of the back of his head, it looked like there. Could that have easily knocked him out? Or would Costa, having looked gassed in the first round, would he have got so tired that Vettori just puts it on him a bit and then the ref's waving it off? You know, I don't know. But, I mean, maybe that's something else to go. I don't think we'll ever see in the UFC, or at least not for a long, long time, people fighting at their natural weight class. I think people will always try and get an advantage and always cut and that kind of thing. But is that what we saw last night? If they were fighting that fight at middleweight, would it have only lasted two rounds? And we got five rounds of really durability and back and forth and big, heavy shots and all that kind of stuff.
Potentially. And that's a great point, because we've seen those exact shots land on people at middleweight who have had to cut weight and they've dropped. The question that then becomes, what's safer? Getting knocked out in the first round or taking those punches for five rounds, like long-term damage and whatnot? It's an interesting one. It probably would do you better to get knocked out and then, all right, well, that happened, rather than taking them over and over again and not falling. But that's another discussion for another time, I guess.
Absolutely. And today's discussion, well, 267. We're going to start at the top, gents.
Let's do it.
Works for me.
Blachowicz, Teixeira. What were we saying?
Well, I mean, it's interesting. But both guys, I feel like, have got quite like similar records of late. I think they're both on five-fight win streaks. They haven't lost for, I think Teixeira hasn't lost in about 3 years. Blachowicz for about 2.5 years. I think I think it's actually going to be a really good fight. I mean, it's going to be a great fight, and it'll be a bit of a fairy tale if Glover was able to pull this off at his age.
Absolutely.
But
41.
I know, but I have to say, I've basically gone kind of against Blachowicz in, like, most fights. And now I'm thinking, I think Blachowicz is the favourite for this fight, which makes me think maybe Glover will end up winning. But I think on paper, the way I see it, I think Blachowicz should have too much for him on the feet. I think he's a way better striker. I also think he would have learned, and he knows. Glover's one of those guys that he eats shots all the time. Glover's so tough. I wouldn't be surprised if Blachowicz knocks him down once or twice in the first two rounds, but Glover somehow survives. And then if Blachowicz
gets... As we saw with Smith.
Yeah.
I like the Smith fight. Teixeira just not going away.
Yeah, and Smith was really putting it on him for the first round and a bit. And then he seemed to gas himself out. I think Blachowicz will be too intelligent for that. I think he would have seen Smith do it. He knows what Glover's about. I wouldn't be surprised if we see a really measured Blachowicz just taking his time and almost outpointing him for the first few rounds. And Glover, like, his striking is, you know, it's efficient and it's successful, excuse me, to a point. But his head movement is, it feels like it's not really, he just gets hit so often.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that legendary Polish power, if that connects, he could be in trouble. I think Glover's big chance is trying to get the fight down. And Blachowicz is great on the mat as well, but trying to get the fight down. And I think that's where he might have more of an advantage, is in the grappling, and see kind of what happens there.
I mean, I think the thing that people forget a bit about Glover, or again, we saw it in Anthony Smith fight, in almost every fight, is he does have ridiculous power. He's not got the best footwork. He's not got the best head movement, but remember those early fights in the UFC with, I think, Maldonado, maybe even with Jimmy Manua, in fact, where he's just throwing the heaviest hands you can see. And again, it's another one that he holds that power for five rounds.
Yeah.
You know, that remains there. As we saw, when someone like Smith starts to gas, he's there just throwing these bombs at him. And then again, you've got the ground game. So it is a really interesting one. But it's also a fight that, 3 or 4 years ago, if you had to guess between this headline in a pay-per-view or the Fight Pass prelims, you would have bet on the Fight Pass prelims, because these were both guys who were kind of middle of the pack and getting older and older. So it is just beautiful to have these real journeymen as the main event. It's a beautiful fight regardless of the winner, I think. But I do think Blake's on to something there. It could be the first time Jan is the favourite in, like, any of his fights in years. So the big irony would be if Teixeira then takes it.
Glover's record's ridiculous. The people that he has fought, he's literally fought everyone.
Yeah.
Absolutely everybody. Just going back, you mentioned the Maldonado fight. Who was the boxer? And Glover outboxed him. So I rate Glover's hands a lot. And then Rampage Jackson, Ryan Bader, John Jones, Phil Davis, OSP, Rashard Evans, Rumble, Cannonier, Gustafsson. He's the experience that dude has got, and he's got some serious wins under his belt, and I think he's got really, really decent hands. I think he's going to do it.
Speaking of decent hands, not to derail at all, but have either of you watched the Fedor supposed retirement fight?
Yeah.
I saw the highlight from last night.
Yeah, I saw the highlight, yeah.
Just beautiful seeing him throw them big, heavy hands as good as he's ever looked. But yeah, anyway, loved it. But yeah, you're reckoning Glover can do it?
Yeah, I think I want the fairy tale, mate. I just want to see him get it, then retire. Like, knock it on the head then. Like,
that'd be an amazing way to go out, wouldn't it? Win the belt and then go, thanks very much, I'm off.
Absolutely.
Because, I mean, is he be defending it against, most likely, Jiří Procházka, who I don't think Glover Teixeira's style matches up well with Jiří Procházka.
That'd be a proper martial arts movie matchup, though, wouldn't it? Jiří against the kind of aging...
Yeah.
beast of a guy. That'd be glorious. Yeah.
And then, I mean, we'll get onto it maybe later. Ankalaev's fighting Uzdemir, and I think Ankalaev's got a really good shot at winning that belt at some point. These are the guys coming up at 205. If I was Glover, I think if he can win it, don't even bother defending it. Just walk away as champ. Go, this was amazing. What a run.
I feel you.
The other thing that's been going on with Jan Blachowicz, the only thing that I think could maybe derail him mentally, and I think he's pretty mentally strong, and obviously he's got the luck of the old, the creepy noose thing he keeps around his wrist as well. Oh, yeah.
Weird.
That we've. If you don't know this story, look up the Jan Blachowicz and the Hangman's Noose story. I think on our second ever episode of this was leading up to the Jan Blachowicz Israel Adesanya fight. And we talk about it there as well. So go back and listen to that. It's an amazing story. But Jan Blachowicz has got into a bit of a Twitter beef with Corey Anderson, who is in the Bellator light heavyweight Grand Prix final against Vadim Nemkov. That'll be coming up at, I don't know, some point probably next year now. And
they both looked great in their semi-final matches, didn't they? Fantastic.
They really did. And I thought it'd be fun to play a little game on the back of that beef of, like, you've got Jan Blachowicz, Glover Teixeira, Corey Anderson, Vadim Nemkov. Rank from 1 to 4. What would you do? Because I've just sprung this on you. I'll go first.
Go on.
I think 4th place, I think I'd go Glover.
Has Glover beaten Corey?
He may have done. I'm not sure. I have to look that up. No, Corey beat Glover. Beat Glover. So I'd go Glover 4th. I think I'd go Corey 3rd. And then I'd go... I think then I'd go Nemkov, then Blachowicz. But those two, I'm not sure. I haven't seen enough of Nemkov, really. And the big thing with Nemkov is... we've not really seen him take on that kind of UFC caliber fighter yet. Bader's kind of a bit past. Yeah, but I do think he'll beat. I think he'll beat Anderson.
You see, I've got it. I would go with Anderson 4th, Glover 3rd. So we've got the same top two and the same bottom two, but I've got them switched. I've got Jan at number 2 and Nemkov at number 1. But I think that's slightly because of the previously mentioned Fedor fanboy, that Nemkov thing of just beating everyone and looking amazing outside, but you never actually have to know if he's good enough to beat the people in the UFC because he never comes. But yeah, I think Nemkov is just so good with that ridiculous power and speed in his hands, but then the ground and pound just being...
Yeah.
There seems to be so few who action ground and pound effectively. And he's one that just looks so dangerous with it. And I could see him getting anyone down and then just pummeling them. But it's a good 4 to choose from.
Yeah, it's good fun 4. I mean, I kind of think the light heavyweight division is the one where you'd probably get the most benefit out of some kind of cross-promotional tournament or something. Because, you know, there's some great people coming up, like your Ankalaevs. Obviously, we're big fans of Paul Craig and Jiří Procházka, but there's not like huge names since Jones left. It has definitely become it's become more of an exciting division in a sense because it feels like a lot of people can beat each other, but you've lost that star power. And I kind of think if you did something fun like a cross promotional thing and you had like your Nemkovs, Andersons, Baders, now Yoel Romero over at Bellator, Rumble Johnson hopefully is getting healthy and hopefully he'll be back. That could be so much fun. I think that would be an amazing thing. It would never happen, but it would be fun.
If they were to do that, someone needs to make sure they've let Yoel know how many rounds each fight is before it starts, just so there's no confusion.
Dear,
but Jiří feels like he could be the one in the UFC to become that next star if it goes how it could go. And he feels like someone would be active. Like, you could see him having a 3 or 4 fight year and by the end of it being the biggest, exactly the same as Starbender did essentially, how he just had a really busy year and by the end of it he's the number one guy.
Such an exciting style as well.
Really, yeah, totally. I love it.
What about you, Stu? What's your 4? How would you rank them?
I agree with yours.
Mine.
Is that because You've forgotten the names he said already and thought it's easy.
Blahovi, Teixeira, Nemkov and Corey. When you sort of rattled yours off, Blake, I was kind of in line with that as well. So,
there you go.
Well, should we talk about the interim bantamweight championship?
Yes, please.
I mean, this is an exciting fight, isn't it?
This is the one I'm most excited about, I think. In terms of technical, everyone knows I'm a huge bantamweight fan. I always love a fighter that's tall and skinny for the weight class, because that's basically how I imagine myself to be if I were to ever get in there. So I'm a huge Corey Sandhagen fan, and I just think bantamweight is such an amazing division. So, yeah, I mean... And also, I think this, for me, I know this is only an interim title and the champion's out injured, but as far as I'm concerned, the winner of this fight is the best 135-pounder on the planet, because Sterling was getting his ass whooped by Jan until that illegal knee. Okay, Jan might be the best 135-pounder. He's maybe not the smartest, but he's one of the best. And as far as I'm concerned, I know the judges didn't agree with me, but Sandhagen beat Dillashaw for me. As far as I'm concerned, this is the number one in the world.
Bit that I think's funniest is that the excitement of this fight, quite rightfully, has just allowed us all to go, yeah, technically Corey's coming off of a loss and he's getting a title shot off the back of a loss, which seems bizarre, but no one cares. I don't care. It's such an exciting fight. My only concern is how recently Corey did look beatable. Like that Sterling fight was, you know, it looked like it was a step too far too soon. Since then, he's looked amazing. But again, the Dillashaw one, you can argue either way, but either way, it was an incredibly close, close fight. So,
have you seen what TJ's come out and said about about the Funkmaster? He's adamant that he'll never fight again. Like, really? He reckons his injury's that bad that he's basically just trying to hold on to the belt as long as he can. He thinks he's never going to fight again. He reckons it's irreparable nerve damage, was what he said. And Dillashaw suspects Sterling has sustained irreparable nerve damage to his neck, and he's just holding on for the belt as long as he can.
Oh, when did TJ get his PhD? Was that recently? Was that when he was on EPO? Did he also do like some kind of like postgrad course and get his doctorate?
Someone don't like TJ today.
He had a couple of years off because of popping for drugs, he had time to study, did he? and also, where's the logic in that? Like, if you're never going to fight again, what's the benefit of holding on to the belt? The belt only benefits you if you're going to fight again because of the way the contracts work, the extra pay you get, the headline.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Opportunity and all that kind of thing. It's bloody TJ. I feel as if we all piled on Stew there. No, That wasn't at you. That was all anger at TJ there.
I was about, you know, like 60-40. I was more on TJ, but I was very upset with Stu as well for even daring to bring something up. But no, look, I mean, I did hear that as well. Mate, look, I don't know. Maybe there's something in that, but we'll have to wait and see. I think regardless, this is, for me, the best fight in the bantamweight division at the moment. I think whoever wins this for me is the champ. I know they might have to unify against Sterling or do a unification bout against TJ. Apparently, TJ was offered the fight. His leg is all fucked up. Why is his leg fucked up? Because Corey Sandhagen got him in like a heel hook or whatever it was during, or a knee bar during their fight. So that was damage done by Sandhagen as well. And then I think they also offered it to Font, and Font turned it down.
That's I think that TJ's got irreparable nerve damage in his leg, so I reckon he's never fighting again, to be completely honest.
That's probably true.
I've got to be honest, I think Yan TJ is a great fight.
Yeah.
Oh, of course it is. It is. Yeah, 100%. I think that's a fantastic fight, but I think that because I scored the Sandhagen TJ fight for Sandhagen, I as far as I'm concerned, this is it. This is the two top guys in the division fighting each other. But obviously a lot of people out there will think TJ won and disagree with me. That's fine.
Or controversial thing is, I think people are forgetting how good Sterling is off the back of how that one fight was going and how it ended. Sterling's amazing, and he's really shown his ability to adapt and be an intelligent fighter. Like when he's had a loss, he's been able to adapt and stuff. So I think that when he comes back, you can't write off, like, if it is against Jan, I wouldn't be assuming it's going to be the domination that we were seeing in that past one. I think there's loads of potential there, but it's an exciting division again, isn't it?
Yeah.
There's just a lot of really good people that you can put together.
Yeah.
Who'd you, and have some excitement.
Who do you fancy to win this one, Pip?
I think Jan, but that's just because of seeing Corey fall short once or twice. He looked amazing against Frankie Edgar, but Frankie Edgar isn't what he once was. He was incredibly close against TJ, who's at that higher level. But even TJ had been out for several years at that point. So I think it's a big test. And I think Jan is just, has ever since he stepped in the octagon, has looked like the heir apparent.
Definitely, definitely. Blake, where are you going with this?
Unfortunately, I do agree with Pip, but I think I'm going to let my heart rule my head and just say, because I really do want Sandhagen to win. I really want him to win. I think he seems like a really nice bloke. As I said, I love the tall, skinny guys. I think also, you look at like his knockout of Frankie Edgar, his knockout of Marlon Moraes. I mean, this is a fun fighter. Someone that's, you know, it just highlight real knockouts and all that stuff. And I know that the Sterling fight didn't go his way. I think he made a big mistake there. I don't think it's a mistake he would make again. And then the TJ fight, I thought he won. And I thought, like, he won despite actually making one or two mistakes in that fight that I think he's aware of. I think he came out in an interview saying that he thought it was kind of clear that he was up, and maybe he did take his foot off the gas once or twice in rounds, and maybe that's not a mistake he would make again. And I just think it's so... The thing with Sandhagen is, someone that's 5'11" at bantamweight that will throw spinning attacks, flying knees and all that stuff, really hard to prepare for. Like, Jan will... I'm sure he will have found some people to emulate Sandhagen and all that kind of stuff. But it's really hard to prepare for. Whereas Jan, it's hard to prepare for him because he's so skillful in so many ways, like the trips, the body lock takedowns and all that kind of stuff, along with the striking.
The thing that just hypnotizes me every time with Jan.
So, but in terms of stature and all that, kind of an average bantamweight. So that is going to be an interesting dynamic as well. So I'm going to go with Sandhagen, but I'm kind of doing it knowing that I'm probably wrong.
Okay. Well, I mean, Pip, me and you can take a back seat now, and we can let Blake talk about it.
I'm sitting back to hear the theme tune.
Right, come on. have you got your Dan Hooker jingle?
For the Dan Hooker appreciation section.
Oh, Hangman, we love you, Hangman. So yeah, I mean, God, let's just take a moment, shall we, boys? Just breathe
exciting,
it in.
Right.
The new BMF of the UFC, Dan the Hangman Hooker. Mm-hmm. I mean, incredible story. I mean, the absolute, for want of maybe a better expression, the balls on the man to take Islam Makhachev, boogeyman of the division, on 4 weeks' notice. And on top of that, he's, you know, he's not got his usual coaching staff around him. He's not seen his family. He's only just coming off of a fight where he travelled late over from New Zealand and he's fought Hackbrast. I mean,
he's dressed in lost property.
He's dressed in Arlovsky's old holy pants and, you know, all that stuff, you know. Yeah, it's Ben Rothwell's probably lent him a tracksuit top that he can go to bed in or something. It's, you know, it's, yeah, it's, there's all sorts of issues he's got going on. But kudos to him. I mean, amazing, really, that he's taken this fight. The only problem for me is, unfortunately, I don't think we're going to get any kind of special happy ending, or, you know, there's no going to be no twists and turns to this. I think we're going to get the expected ending, which is Makhachev dominating, taking him down and probably grinding out a dominant decision, because I don't see how anyone deals with that wrestling. And Makhachev's great on the feet as well. He's got added strings to his bow that Khabib never really had, in that kind of like much better striking, I think. But I think it's the wrestling that gets the job done for him. And I think it could be similar to the Drew Dober fight that we saw, where he just pins him down and Hangman just can't find a way out of it.
You see, I'm hearing this a lot, but I kind of controversially, I don't think Dan Hooker's here for his participation medal. I think this is the hardest test that Makhachev's had by a long way. You look through the people he's beaten, I wouldn't put any of them on Hooker's level, whereas Hooker has had people at least as tough as Makhachev, you know, rankings-wise and everything else. So, yeah, I don't know. I've got a feeling that Dan's going to surprise people. It's always tough with Makhachev. I had this with Khabib for a big chunk of his career when everyone was saying he's the best in the world. Again, I was proved wrong. He turned out to be exactly as good as he seemed, but there was a long time where he hadn't fought anyone particularly good yet, because of how dominant he looked against middle of the pack people. Everyone felt he can do that to top of the pack people. And I'm just interested to see. I think Hooker has got good footwork. I think Hooker's got good range control. So I think potentially with his kicks and stuff, he may be able to keep, if he can control the distance, it's not going to be as easy to just sandwich him into the mat and beat him up. So yeah, I don't know. It's going to be fun though.
I mean, yeah. I mean, I think he's there to win. Don't get me wrong. I just don't. Yeah. I don't think there's much he's going to be able to do about it. And you're right. I think maybe Hooker is definitely the toughest guy Makhachev has fought. And I know that Hooker's fought people as tough, not maybe tougher than Makhachev in terms of like the toughness level. But it's that wrestling, that wrestling credential, where I just go, it just seems like the silver bullet. If you are someone with that Dagestani elite level wrestling, I just don't know what you do. And obviously he's got Khabib in his corner as well. And Khabib is like up for coach of the year at the moment. He's constantly, his fighters in Bellator, in the UFC, they're constantly winning. And yeah, I'd love to see it. I want to see Dan Hooker win this fight. And if he does, give him a title shot. I don't care what happens in the Gaethje-Chandler fight. I don't care. Give it to the Hangman. He's fucking earned it. The UFC love a company man. Give that man. And the thing is, if it's Hangman versus Poirier, what a fight we had the first time round. Let's do it again. If it's Hangman versus Oliveira, fun fight. Let's do it.
Yeah, 100%. And let's do it before the end of the year. And Dan can just stay a little bit longer and then go home for Christmas. He literally left the house to get milk and then comes back 4 months later as UFC champion.
Yeah, that'd be it. So good.
All over it. Comes home for Christmas. Wow.
Just looking ahead, Makhachev wins, right? So if that happens, just looking at the division and who potentially fights him, for me, Dariush, that'd be a great fight.
That'd be good. Up for some of that.
Did we see him in a corner last night?
Yeah.
Yes, in Vittori's corner.
He was, wasn't he? Yeah.
I think Dariush Makhachev is a much more even fight because I think Dariush has good wrestling and grappling base. I think that could easily be a good fight. I mean, the other thing is, though, I mean, there's permutations to the Gaethje-Chandler fight and the Oliveira-Poirier fight. That means Makhachev could go straight into a title shot as well. I mean, if Oliveira beats Poirier and Chandler beats Gaethje, surely the UFC aren't going to do Chandler-Oliveira again so quickly. Yeah. Mm. So who else do
Same
you have?
Same with Poirier and Gaethje. If the other way wins, if Poirier wins and Gaethje win, are you going to do Gaethje-Poirier again?
I think you Probably do. Not. I think you do because they're both fan favourites. The first fight was amazing. And I think Gaethje has... I think any hardcores know that Gaethje now is a much more intelligent fighter than he was when he fought Poirier before and he was just going... I'm just going to keep taking shots to give shots.
Yeah, so I'm just going to stand and bang.
Yeah, I think they would do that.
Yeah,
and I still think it's a fun fight. But that thing of if Charles Oliveira wins and Chandler wins, I don't think you'd read... As much as that was a really fun fight for like a round and a half or whatever, I just think that's so fresh that you wouldn't do it again. And that could lead Makhachev into a title shot immediately.
Yeah, I think you could be right. Looking at that division and looking at the win streak Oliveira's on, the win streak Dariush is on, and the win streak Makhachev is on, that's ridiculous. To have three win streaks like that currently on the go in that division, and then you throw in people who have only really lost to Nurmagomedov recently in Poirier, in Gaethje, you know.
So with Benil... He's got no fight scheduled, so is this down to... I know after his last win, he had a baby, didn't he? I don't know if he's just taking time out to be dad. I don't know. Is there any kind of worry? He's not injured, is he?
No, I don't know. I think it's more just everyone's booked up.
Yeah,
you look at number one and number two are fighting, number three and number five are fighting, and now number six and number seven are fighting.
Yeah.
And number eight is the last person he beat.
Yeah.
Mm. So what do you do with him? Does he fight someone outside of the top 10? That seems mad to be number four and have to fight someone out of the top 10. Obviously, number 10 is RDA, who was meant to be in this fight. So, yeah, he's in a really odd position.
Yeah. He's also probably just enjoying driving around his Tesla that Elon Musk gave him after the last fight, after he called out Elon Musk. He's probably just loving life driving around in a Tesla. Yeah. So, yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. Right. What's next on the card?
Well, I think it might be some big boys in Volkov and Tybura. And, I mean, Tybura's on a really great win streak, I think. But Volkov, I think, is the toughest test he would ever have had. And I really rate Volkov. I think, he's lost to Garn, which, I mean, I think Garn could potentially be the best heavyweight in the world at the moment. So no shame in that. Lost to Curtis Blaydes, who's got that kind of elite level wrestling. And I think since that fight, he's kind of like bulked up a little bit more as well as Volkov. Mm. And then there was that Derek Lewis fight where he did lose that fight, but he was winning that fight pretty easily until Lewis just caught him right at the end of the fifth round and laid him out and did what Derek Lewis does best, I guess. But so I think Volkov is like one of those guys that has been and will be in and around the top five for a long, long time. And I think Tybura's win streak hasn't necessarily had anyone to the standard of Volkov in it. So I'm favouring Volkov in this fight.
Yeah, I think you could be right. I didn't really realise, though, that Tybura has beaten Walt Harris, Ben Rothwell, Greg Hardy. There's some good people there.
Yeah.
I mean, Greg Hardy aside, but... But I agree. I think Volkov is great, but I think it's those fights against Garn and Blaydes where it has just seemed there is a level above him.
Yeah.
And I don't see how he closes that. Like, the matchup with Garn is the perfect test because they're very similar kinds of fighters. And I just felt he looked, a level down. But yeah, I think Tybura does. He's another one that feels like one that you're like, where's his ceiling? You know, I think that a lot with heavyweights. There's a lot of heavyweights. A Tai Tuivasa, like people who you think you love them, but are they going to be that upper echelon? And this is, I guess, his first real chance to answer that.
Yeah, I think, you know, Tybura is a guy that could be in the top 10 for a while, but I think Volkov's more top 5, and I think that's where the difference is. And I think Volkov could potentially fight for a belt one day, but I don't think he'll ever be a champion. I can't see him getting a win over a Garn or even an Ngannou, or I don't even want to say his name, but you know who comes back from all the shit that's going on with him. And then you've got people coming through, like your Chris Dorcases, like your Tom Aspinalls, who I think could actually potentially surpass Volkov as well. So I think Volkov is a top 5 guy. I don't necessarily ever see him being champion, but I do think he'll be able to take care of Tybura.
Okay. Pip, who you picking?
Yeah, I think Volkov. I think he's... I completely agree with what Blake said, basically. I think skills-wise, he's just got more in the bag. He feels like he's that level above.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Do you ever feel like your brain is on overdrive and your mind is constantly racing? The plans, worries, and to-do lists are never ending. Calm can help your mind take a break from the noise by softening anxiety symptoms in the moment and helping you cope with day-to-day stressors. Calm is the number one app for sleep and meditation, giving you the power to calm your mind and change your life. For listeners of the show, Calm is offering an exclusive offer of 40% off a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/stressless. Go to calm.com/stressless for 40% off unlimited access to Calm's entire library. That's calm.com/stressless.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
it. Coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, do we want to move on to what's happening at 170?
I mean, you talk about Hamzat Chimaev, I'm assuming, yeah?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. This is so interesting. I don't know if anyone has had the push that Hamzat Chimaev has had. Even Connor didn't get the Hamzat Chimaev push, in my opinion. Chimaev beat a Reese McKee on maybe like his UFC debut, who was up a weight class from where he was fighting that previously, I think. John Phillips. And then at middleweight, I know that he absolutely smashed Gerald Mershart. And Mershart's gone on to do, you know, little bits here and there. And he's got, I think, the most submission wins in the UFC. So that's a good win. But for him to do those three wins, I know that two of them were within like 2 or 3 weeks of each other or whatever it was. But to go from
days.
That. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's amazing. That is amazing. But to go from that, those wins, those names, to go, oh, let's organise a fight with him and Leon Edwards, who at the time is like third or fourth in the world or whatever. You're like, you're fucking nuts. There's no way that that's right. That was a crazy push. And then obviously, Hamzat gets COVID, and it seems to be a really bad bout of COVID. Like, he was talking about retirement at one point. So yeah, this is interesting on a number of levels. One, was the push too much? Because Xing Liang, good fighter. Again, will he ever be a champion? Will he ever really cement a place in the top five? I don't know that he would. So this is a really interesting test for Chimaev, because if Chimaev is the guy that the UFC wants him to be, if he is the guy that a lot of fans just went nuts for him for, and he ended up with like a million followers overnight and all this kind of stuff, he should win this fight. But there's no evidence as of yet that he would win this fight. So it's really interesting. And then you throw in the COVID stuff, where it was a bad bout of COVID. But how much will it have affected him long term? These are all really interesting questions that we all want to see answered. And I don't know about you guys, if you think that we've seen enough of him to go, oh no, he should be in the top 10 of the welterweight division or not.
I feel exactly what you're saying there. I think this would always have been the biggest test of Chimaev's career so far. But you add that long period off and heavy illness because of COVID, and it's so hard to give any real prediction or analysis as such, because we don't know if we're getting the same fighter back now. And again, yeah, this is a tough return. Like, considering what he sounds like he's gone through, you might have thought he's going to come back to an easier fight. But the Leech is no joke. He's got knockout power at that weight class, and he can grapple. Probably not Chimaev's level of grappling, but it's not like they're... like, the Leon Edwards matchup seemed unfair on Leon, because if Leon has a weakness, it's grappling. So it felt like you're going, all right, well, you're giving him a really good guy, but one that he might be, that on Chimaev's count, that he might be able to beat, because it matches his strengths versus weaknesses. Whereas, yeah, the Leech is yeah, pretty all round. So it's, yeah, it's going to be an interesting one.
If I made you pick, who are you going for?
Oh, it's so hard. It's hard because of the COVID.
There's no evidence. There's no evidence. Even without the COVID, there's no evidence to say that this man can do it. I might have got sucked into all the hype. If he was fighting Li Jingliang 3 months after he took out Mirshah, I'd go, go on, let's jump on the train. Let's go.
Within a month or two, we'd go, we're going to have him as champion in the first year. Yeah, let's do it.
But Kamaru Usman who? What are you talking about?
Yeah. But yeah, it's tough with that.
For the story, I'll put my head on the chopping blocks. Yeah, for the storyline, because if Li Jingliang wins, his ceiling for me is he'll never really be a top five guy, top 10, top 15. He'll do well. We'll stay in the UFC for a while, but there's not really a great story to follow as a fan. If Chimaev wins, we're all going to get really excited again and go, "Fucking hell, we've got this guy. Where's his ceiling? Who knows? We don't know what his limit is." And I think if Chimaev wins, we could have a bit of a fun time seeing him fight a few extra people up the ranks.
To quickly counter this, because I feel we're talking about a lot of fighters' ceilings in these last two, the best thing in the world is when they exceed their ceiling. Like we saw Charles Oliveira's ceiling a few years back. And we saw Dustin Poirier's ceiling
Jan Blachowicz
a few years back
as well.
Jan Blachowicz, prime example. We've seen their ceilings and then they've smashed through it. So it's not meant in a disrespectful way to say we can't see much, but on their current, of what we've currently seen, it feels like here's what we're getting.
Well, the true litmus test at welterweight seems to be Neil Magny. That seems to be the one.
Yeah.
And it's one where, you know, Li Jingliang has fallen short of that ceiling. Yeah. And if Hamzat wins this, that's a fight that could be interesting, because Neil Magny was desperate for that fight for ages.
Interestingly, one of the only people who was calling out Chimaev, going, "Oh, he's popular, is he?"
Yeah, and I mean, and he is. He's a great barometer for that division. I'm sure he wouldn't want to see himself as just that. He'd want to see himself as a title challenger, but unfortunately, that's the kind of role that he seems to be in now. And that fight against Michael Chiesa passed that test, and now he's looking forward. You know. So, yeah, or he was. Who did he got beat by? Luque, didn't he? Yes, sir. Am I right in saying that? Yeah, he did.
Yeah, I think so.
So, I mean, he was looking forward. Now, not so much.
Yeah, he got subbed out, didn't he?
Yes.
Sorry, he got Chiesa'd.
But yes, he did get Chiesa'd. But I think it's a really the stories of this fight are really interesting to follow. So this is one that I think people will be watching really closely.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, we obviously want to talk about a former guest of the show who's fighting on this card. But is there any other fights that you want to sort of touch upon before we eke our way into the prelims?
I think the card's a bit light on women, but the women we have got are scrappers, and Hebus and Yander Ober all put on a show. I'm glad to see that closing off the prelims. So I think that will be a fun one. But again, there's not as much to talk about in that division at the moment, because of the domination at the top in all of the women's divisions, or the top three or four, as it is in some.
What? I mean, that strawweight division, though, is the most exciting division. It's one of the most exciting divisions in the UFC, let alone that, like, it's obviously the most exciting female division. But, we've seen, like, Ribas was on a five-fight win streak until she ran into Marina Rodriguez, and we saw what she did to Mackenzie Dern. She's no joke. I mean, her versus like a Joanna Jacek would be some fight. That would be something I'd really like to see. But it looks like there could be a bit of a logjam in that division, because we've got Zhang Weili fighting Rose in a few weeks or whatever. And then if Zhang wins, you know they're going to have to do a trilogy.
Yeah.
If Rose wins, Esparza's owed a title shot, as far as I'm concerned. She should be doing that. Marina Rodriguez is looking great. Joanna could come back at any moment. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just a stacked division. It's a very exciting place. And you know, Hebus and Jander Ober.
Let's not overlook Suarez in here as well, who obviously beat Esparza as well.
Well, Tatiana Suarez is apparently going to 125.
Oh, really?
I heard her say on an interview on with Ariel Helwani a few weeks back that she's thinking of going to 125, and her first fight back should be at 125. And yeah, that's the plan, I think, for her. But yeah, if she came down to 115 again, that's another extraordinary fighter that's had neck surgery, a bit like Sterling's had, and is coming back. So yeah, where are you at, TJ?
You might want to check on TJ, see what the actual lowdown is on that.
But yeah, but I think that could be a great fight. Both are really good grapplers. A lot of wins by submissions, Jander Ober and Hebus. If I had to pick one, I'd probably lean towards Jander Ober. But I mean, I think that just could be another really good scrap anyway.
I agree.
Should we touch on Lerone Murphy and his fight?
Yeah.
So I don't know if you guys are what you're using for some of your info in front of you today. I don't know if any of you are on Tapology, which is where I like to get my info from. Yep. Can I just ask that you click on Makwan Amakani's page and just check out his picture.
Oh, yeah, no, I've seen it. I don't even have to click on it. I know it. Please, everyone, go to Tapology and click on Makwan Amakani and see that picture.
I mean, yeah. I don't know why there's not a shot of him. Well, I know why there's not a shot of him fighting, because he's got that photo. And he's obviously just probably got in touch with Tapology and said, could you stick this in, please, mate? Yeah, I mean, Lerone, obviously, it didn't happen in... When was he due to fight? It was the cursed card, wasn't it?
It was September 4th, the visa issues for September 4th.
Of course. Well, and also, is Makwan... Does he fight out of Ireland?
Yeah, he's SBG guy, yeah.
Yeah, he is, isn't he? Yeah. I mean, I don't know too much about him.
He's great. I'm a big fan of Amakani, and he's... I was just looking at his record. I remember the first time he got a win, he did one of the best post-fight interviews, because he was saying, I'm going to use my win bonus to buy my mum a bed, because she needs a new bed at the moment. And just the most adorable, lovable guy. But I was just looking at his record, and I think his charmingness is taking him far, because his record in the UFC isn't amazing. Like, those first two or three, I remember he beat... Or was it Ogley beat by flying knee? Yeah. Just looked brutal. And he looked like he could be on the route to being a contender, but he's 6-4 in the UFC at the moment, which isn't the best of records, but he is explosive. He's a decent all-rounder, so it's a big test.
And you wonder at this point in his career as well, two losses on the bounce. So, I mean, granted, one of them was to Barboza as well, so let's take nothing away from him, but two losses on the bounce, loses to Lerone, does that mean he gets cut? I don't know. Maybe, you know, you could see something special from him, knowing that this could be shit or bust.
Yeah, I think that potentially could happen. I think this is another one of those storylines where you go, where is Lerone Murphy really? Because I think he could be a fighter that is in the top 10 and doing very, very well. And I think this is the type of test that you have to overcome to show that you're going to do that. Because you look at Amir Khani's record, and who are his losses to? Arnold Allen, who I think currently might have the longest win streak in the featherweight division. If not, it's right up there. Shane Burgos, who we've seen do incredibly well, and then he ran into Edson Barboza and had that terrible knockout. A loss again then to Edson Barboza, who we discussed and how good he is. The only one I don't really know too much about is Kamella Kirk. I don't really know much about him. So, I mean, that makes you think, is that loss something? Are you on the way down there? It's only a decision. And, I don't know. But I do think that Lerone, if he passes this fight, he'll be, I think, 3-0-1 because he got that draw in his debut in the UFC. And he'll probably be looking forward into that top 15 after that point, especially if he wins in style. But I think Amir Khani is a tough out. I mean, he loses a lot of his losses are usually by decision. So I think it could be a three-round war. But I would favour Lerone Murphy, and I will happily say that I am biased and I want him to win anyway.
Absolutely. Anyone that gets shot in the face and spits out a bullet, I'm always going to be on their side.
100%.
Right, well, look, I mean, gents, have we got anything else we want to talk about on this card?
I suppose there's got to be a quick shout-out for Ankalaev Uzdemir, because that's a big fight in the light heavyweight division.
Big time.
Ankalaev is on a 6-fight win streak. The only loss he had was in his UFC debut against Paul Craig in that fight where Paul Craig was losing the fight and admitted on our show that he was losing the fight, threw up a triangle with seconds to go, and in 4 minutes and 59 seconds of the third round, which was the last round of the fight, Ankalaev tapped. And you're like, that's quite something. That is, you know, the latest submission you're ever going to get in a fight, the last second of the last round.
And that was a big derailing of a hype machine, because Ankalaev came into the UFC with loads of hype. And it's like, you got a loss, but with the greatest respect to Paul Craig, you beat Paul Craig for pretty much three rounds. He looked really good, and then he got a tap. But yeah, he's now on a hell of a run, and he's dangerous.
I think he's really dangerous. I mean, Uzdemir is someone that, again, has been around for a little while now. He gets some weird judging decisions, Uzdemir, because I remember being in London for his fight against Reyes. And I don't know how the judges scored that for Reyes. Granted, when you're watching it live, maybe it's a bit different, a bit more difficult, whatever. But I was watching it live at the event, and I really thought that Uzdemir beat Reyes. But then equally, I think I remember his fight against Rakic, which he won by split decision, and thought to myself, I thought Rakic won that fight. So there's some back and forth, some odd decisions in Uzdemir's career, as far as I'm concerned. But I would favour Ankalaev in this fight. 6-fight win streak. I think he's coming for that belt, or at least a challenge for it. And I don't think Uzdemir is... I don't think Uzdemir is going for that belt again anytime soon, where I think Ankalaev could be.
He's fought some great people, Uzdemir.
Really, yeah.
Look at his wins over Serkanov, OSP and Manua, but then 3 losses in a row, but to Daniel Cormier, Anthony Smith and Dominic Reyes. It's really... beating Latifi and Rakic. Yeah. It's a good battle, right?
Yeah.
It's just a hell of a card.
It's a really great card. It's a really great card. Again.
And it's followed up the week later with another insane card. So, yeah.
Yeah.
What a time.
Yeah.
We've got some insane cars left, right and centre coming up. Everything they're announcing at the moment is red hot.
Yeah. Typical that I'm doing that fucking play while not fucking I love the play. It's really great. Come and see it. It's typical that I'm missing all these British timed cards.
I was going to say, this card is the last one that they're programming against UK theatres.
Yes.
So after this, they go back to theatre-friendly cards and stop the Saturday Night Wars that I've been having.
Once my run is finished and I would be able to watch the cards, that's when they're starting to put them on at like 3 a.m. again. So thanks very much, UFC.
It's the curse of this podcast. When you was out in Canada, Pip, that's when they started putting them all on as well, wasn't it?
Yeah,
over
all on the UK times. I was having to get up and like set my alarm for 7 o'clock in the morning to watch the prelims. Like, come on, lads. Help me out.
Speaking of being in Canada doing acting and stuff, what you got coming up, Pip? What's happening? I mean, I know you're in the... just mention that you're in the cinemas at the moment, in Venom.
Yeah, in Venom 2.
Anything
That's
else?
Good fun. I've been doing a live-action computer game recently, but that's probably out next year, I'd imagine. So, yeah, not too much. It's all
when you say you're doing that, what are you doing? Like recording a voice for it, or are you doing like a mocap thing?
No, it's fully live-action. It's from the guys who did the film Host, which was the huge Zoom-based a horror film that came out last year. And their next project is a live-action computer game, and it's all actually us there. So it's pretending to be a Ghost Hunters-type TV show, and me and Alice Lowe are the hosts, and I'm a huge fan of Alice Lowe.
She's
and all
great,
the girls
yeah.
who were in Host are the girls going into the house and doing the hunt. And the way the game works, essentially, is you're in the production van. So you're choosing what cameras to go to. There's mad stuff going on. You're having to bring adverts in. It's hard to explain, but it sounds bonkers. But it's been good fun to film.
That sounds fun.
Yeah, wonderful. It's all right, laugh.
Wonderful. Well, Pip, it's always a pleasure to have you on. Shout out to Brian, who can't make it tonight. Normally we would have had a friend of the podcast, Brian Lacey, on. I'm sure he'll be back next time to have all four of the original gang back for these pre and post chats. Yeah, we'll be back next time, Blake.
Yeah, we'll be back next time.
Bye.
Bye, guys.